Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with Avis Berman, a writer, art historian, and guest curator of a special exhibition at the Barnes Foundation showcasing the work of William Glackens. I first asked her about Glackens' success as an artist in his own time.
Yes, William Glackens was a successful artist in his own time. Certainly much more of a critical success and being respected by his peers and being in most of the important shows, both artist organized and in all sorts of museum loan shows and annuals. He was not always a financial success. He didn't sell too many paintings because they were considered too strong for the time. I mean, he first really sold a few, other than his one great patron, Albert Barnes, who bought throughout his lifetime. He began to sell a little bit in the 20s and 30s, but the first few didn't really occur till after his death. And then his wife, Edith Glackens, decided she wanted to keep as many together as possible. So they shut down the sales for a while. So sales didn't really begin until the 1950s.
And he was known as one of the eight. What was the significance of that?
The eight was a term coined by a critic for eight artists who showed together only once, never again. And it really wasn't stylistic at all. It was about eight artists who believed in the artist's right to show or sell anything he or she wished and not have control over the subject or the style. It was about eight artists who believed in independence, and because they were adversarial to the system, they were being frozen out of a lot of exhibition societies. And so they decided to have a show of their own.
They were adversarial to the system because of their subjects?
For two reasons. Is that they were adversarial because of the subject matter of the time, which were some of them was rather gritty realism, was considered to have sullied the good name of art in a rather genteel and decorous era.
So, and does this connect with the idea that he was also known as one of the ashcan artists?
The term ashcan wasn't coined until the 1930s, so that's somewhat retrospective. He was ashcanny, shall we say, maybe in the beginning of his career, but he began to move away from that when he began to do fewer city scenes.
So this exhibition is so beautiful and is so varied. Is there a way to describe his contribution in terms of color or style? He seems to have a lot of different influences.
I think that Glackens' importance was that he really was a pioneer and remained a pioneer. And in his earlier work, he was a pioneer in very unsparing subjects. I think you can say that there are definitely some sexual transactions going on in some of the early work. He also, in a painting like The Shoppers, he was really one of the first to show consumers and the desire for wanting things, and just the way Theodore Dreiser did in Sister Carrie. He unerringly went toward also the theater and the performance aspect of life. He was also interested in the power of fashion. You can really start looking at the clothes and see how he used the costumes because he picked them out. So he was very interested in a kind of psychological realism. And then that began to be a little bit journalistic for him. And then it was not enough. And he began to experiment with brushwork and palette and certainly intensification of his palette. It gets brighter and brighter and hotter and hotter. It's what's happening with Matisse and Bonnard in Paris. He's not using local color anymore. In other words, he's using what color he thinks is best. In other words, it's getting more abstract. It's what you can see one face looks a little green or something, but it's what he sees. So he's making a lot more experiments. But to him, it was always really rooted in the depiction of accuracy in the world. And someone made a comment, oh, these paintings are so bright. What about your early work? And he said, but they're like mud. He said, life's not like that. There is color in life. So he really wanted to see, he wanted a truth. It was originally kind of a narrative truth or a truth about what people were doing. He was now going toward, shall we say, an artistic or an aesthetic truth about what you really were seeing, how you were perceiving.
You said he always painted the world around him. So by looking at his work, you kind of saw what his life was like.
Yes, Glackens always painted his world, and you see not just where he lived, but you see his family, his surroundings, what's becoming a very comfortable world, and really, it's quite biographical. I mean, it's not super specific. It's not as if they're acting out anything, but you really get the timbre of a life.
Let's talk about his other great contribution, because in addition to being a wonderful artist himself, he collaborated with Albert Barnes.
Yes. If Glackens had never done anything else in his life, the fact that he was essential to the genesis of the formation of the art collection at the Barnes Foundation would have made him a significant cultural figure. Glackens and Barnes had gone to high school together, and what had bound them was not just art. Glackens made all these drawings and caricatures that Barnes loved, but they both played baseball together for several, and they loved baseball. And as a matter of fact, when Glackens sometimes comes to visit Barnes, he says, "Oh, I'm going to get tickets to the World Series." So then in about 1911, Barnes, who was obviously a brilliant man, living on the main line, was just not enough for him. He wanted to do something else. I mean, he had money, and he just needed something inner. And he decided he wanted to collect art. And meanwhile, he connects with Glackens in 1911. And Glackens in 1911 is really firing on all cylinders. He's painted the Nova Scotia pictures, these wonderful Belport Beach scenes. He's painted Family Group, Nude with a Girl with Apple, and all of these. So he's very respected. He's been written up as a modern artist in the color class. So he's respected and he's noticed and he's a nice guy. So Barnes consults him and then asks him to help him and gives him $20,000 in the famous phrase spot cash to go to Paris and buy art. And Glackens takes this very seriously. He writes many letters to his wife about his progress and what's happening, and he brings Alfred Maurer, who lives in Paris, along with him to the dealers, and Alfred Maurer takes him to see Gertrude and Leo Stein. So he sees the greatest collection of modern art at the moment in Paris, the ultra-modern art in Paris. And he buys 33 paintings and works on paper, many which are still in the Barnes collection today, but including the great Van Gogh, the portrait of Joseph Rollin, the postman, Picasso's Woman with a Cigarette, which was an extremely tough picture, and a Cezanne and a Renoir and many more. So it really is the beginning. But Barnes learned so quickly that he never asks anyone to buy for him again. And Glackens was always very modest about his role, although he had it. But afterwards, they remain friends. He goes to Glackens' studio. They go to art exhibitions together. So the art connection remains. And then meanwhile, Barnes buys more than 60 works by Glackens. So he was his greatest patron over the years.
That's amazing when you think about this one little trip that influenced the development of this collection so strongly. It's just amazing. It's as if this exhibition and having it here tell so many different stories, but one of them is clearly the power of personal relationships and what goes into preserving an artistic legacy.
Yes, many things go, you know, into how art is perceived and received. And art is just not an oil painting in a heavy gold frame. It makes a huge difference, although, you know, Barnes certainly did many things on his own, but it is, it really is one of the great what ifs. What if he had not called Glackens? What would have happened?
Last question. You mentioned in your remarks that Glackens has been unsung for many years. Why is that?
Glackens has not received his due, I think, because of certain misperceptions. Is that, first of all, at the Barnes, people do not hate Renoir. And people just saw him as some imitator of Renoir. And that was looked at as very bad. Whereas, first of all, I think, for example, if you look at the paintings of Washington Square and something like, where do you find Renoir in those? And many other paintings. But I believe that all art is based on other art, and all artists are on others' shoulders. And so, and also, I really didn't think it was all about Renoir. I mean, I see Matisse and Bonnard, and I just thought that he had more diversity, more depth. Also, I think that a lot of paintings are in museums, and some were that we haven't here were kind of hidden away in private collections, not just hidden away, but not publicized. So I think if you look at him and you get the right pictures together, it's very different. I think that people had an idea of him through maybe just a few paintings and not maybe the totality of his work, which is what I really want to say. The important point I want to make about the Barnes Foundation is that, as I have said, Glackens is to Barnes as Whistler is to Freer. You have the great collector, and then there's an institution in which it doesn't travel and it doesn't lend, so you never get the full view of the artist's work. So having this exhibition at the Barnes Foundation, we have 90 pieces from museums and private collectors around the country, plus the 45 or so Glackens is on the permanent collection. This is the first time you can really evaluate his total achievement, and because of that, maybe he will be less unnoticed in the future.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. Believe it or not, I'm still excited about it.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.